Now, get ready for the hottest talk show of the year, Primetime Live, with your host, renowned attorney Scott Weinberg. Brought to you live by Clear Channel Radio and syndicated nationally on TalkZone.com. Discuss all the sizzling hot cases making headline news today and how you can protect your rights. And now, here's your host, Scott Weinberg.
Good morning. A beautifully cloudy morning this morning here on 1310 AM. Can stalking a student get you disbarred as an attorney? Can it? Will an assistant attorney general for this great state of Michigan lose his law license? And what is the recourse for anyone who's being stalked? We'll get to that story and answer the, quote, stalking question later on in the show. Can you sue a four-year-old? Have you heard about this? Can you sue a four-year-old? Who is responsible for our children's actions? Well, we'll talk about a story about an 87-year-old woman suing a four-year-old kid. That's right. Did you hear me? Four-year-old kid. We'll ask that question in this ridiculous case. How old can you sue someone? How old do you have to be? And how old does that person have to be? And lastly, should you be able to get your family's brains when you die? Is that ridiculous? Who would even think of that? But that is what's going on with our Supreme Court. Who has the right over your body parts when you die? We'll talk about a woman who is buried without her brain and they just don't know what to do. Plus, we might get to your questions, obviously, with your legal questions, any kind of legal question you got. You can call me here at 248-848-1310. This is Crime Time Live. I'm Scott Weinberg, and we'll get right back to you.
Identify yourself, please.
This is Detroit's Progressive Talk, 1310 WDTW, Dearborn, Detroit.
What have you done for your marriage today? While you're thinking, here's what other people had to say.
My husband and my daughter and I went for a walk together.
Well, and it's going to be her birthday next week, so I've been spending time today making arrangements to make that extra special.
I called my wife on the phone and I told her, Sue, I love you. And I meant it.
I flirted with my husband like when we first got married.
I have carried my wife's purse.
What I have done for my marriage today is give my wife a break, take the kids out, have a good time so she can just relax.
I know I didn't fight.
What have I done for my marriage today? Wow. I don't know.
I cooked my husband's favorite breakfast.
I read the newspaper to my wife, and it cracked her up.
What have I done? I'm actually giving my wife the rest of the day off from me. She's going to visit with her girlfriend.
What have you done for your marriage today? Try something new to make yours great. For ideas, go to foryourmarriage.org. A message from the Catholic Communication Campaign.
Have you or a loved one been arrested or charged with a crime? Do you want to stay out of jail and keep your record clean? Hi, I'm attorney Scott Weinberg, host of Crime Time Live, heard Saturday mornings 11 to 12 noon on 1310 WDTW. Call my office anytime to protect your rights at 1-800-NO-JAIL-1 or go to our website at 1-800-NO-JAIL-1.com. We have payment plans for everyone's budget. There should never be a price on protecting your rights. Call 1-800-NO-JAIL-1 right now.
He would come home after a hard day and just start in on me, you know, like, hey, how's your day? How was school? What you got going on? I mean, it gave me the chills.
My father would drive me all the way to the mall. He wouldn't stop until we were right in front of my friends. And oh my God, when
I wanted to go to Europe, and he seriously made me get a job to pay for it. And that one time,
he insisted on taking us to the movies, even though he knew Steven totally worked there and I was totally in love with him. And
the time I got this wicked cool scorpion tattoo on my shoulder, not even the whole arm, just the shoulder, and he grounded me for 2 weeks. 2 weeks! And oh yeah.
When I wanted to major in ceramics because I'm like way good at it, my dad told me I'd have to pay my own tuition. Like, duh. How am I supposed to earn that kind of dough making pottery?
Embarrass them, horrify them, freak them out. Don't worry, they'll appreciate it. Eventually. A message from the National Fatherhood Initiative and the Ad Council. Have you been a dad today? For more information, visit fatherhood.org.
Don't stop. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss with HHS HealthBeat. Whatever happened to good old-fashioned play? As we grow up, being physically active often changes somehow from playing to exercising. Play is fun. Exercise, well, for many of us, that's not fun. And without play, we quit being active, so we get out of shape and start gaining weight. But new reports call on us to be physically active for the sake of our health, so what can we do? At the President's Council on Physical Fitness and Sports, Executive Director Melissa Johnson says it's simple. Get on your walking shoes and go for a walk, or do something else you enjoy.
A lot of sedentary or deconditioned people haven't yet experienced the good feeling of just movement. And once that becomes familiar to them, they don't want to stop.
Federal officials recommend 30 minutes of moderate activity on most, if not all, days of the week as a minimum for good health. HHS Health Beat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
Welcome back to the show. What is going on with the Attorney General's office? Have you kept abreast of this case? Oh, I have got to bring you up to date. Chris Armstrong, that's right, Chris Armstrong is going after Andrew Scherville's law license. Do you remember this, Andrew Scherville, the Assistant Attorney General? Armstrong, the president of the Michigan Student Assembly at the University of Michigan, yesterday, filed a misconduct complaint with the Michigan Attorney Grievance Commission, and Scherville, we know, as the Michigan Assistant Attorney General, he's been under fire for that blog in which he attacked Armstrong, the first openly gay president of the Michigan Student Assembly. Armstrong is seeking an investigation, a disciplinary and possible disbarment of Scherville, according to a press release by his attorney. The complaint is on the grounds that Scherville repeatedly harassed and defamed Armstrong in a relentless 6-month campaign of lies, dishonesty, heckling, hate speech, even the job interference. The misconduct Ruth Scherville is accused of violating says it's professional misconduct for a lawyer to engage in conduct involving dishonesty, fraud, and a range of other crazy things. Armstrong says that his filing that Scherville made obviously false, disgusting, and utterly outlandish allegations of Armstrong's lifestyle. Now remember, this is the guy who basically put the blog together while he's the Assistant Attorney General and was going after this kid who's the Michigan University of Michigan student, Go Blue. I felt that I could not stand by and let Mr. Scherville continue his relentless bullying behavior, Armstrong says in a release. Of course, the filing comes 4 days after Armstrong withdrew a request for a personal protection order against Scherville, saying that he's assured Scherville would stop contacting him. Is it stalking? That's the first thing you got to decide. You know, when anybody has someone who is harassing them, who is bothering them on a continuing basis, who is threatening them, who is causing them this kind of grief, what happens is most of the time the police, they'll recommend you get what? That's right, a personal protection order. That's where you file with the circuit court in whatever county you live in, and you say, listen, this guy is bothering me, this woman is harassing me, this is a continuing effort to harass me, and I want the courts to say it is now illegal for you to have contact, and they file it. But what they do is they file it ex parte. Do you know what that is? Ex parte means basically without the other party there. So you can go down to your circuit court, file this without any proof of anything other than your word, and you're going to get a judge or a referee to order that that individual can't have contact. But what you have to do is you got to do a couple things. You got to serve the other party with this ex parte order, which means you got to physically get it handed to them. And they have a right to have a hearing on it within a short amount of time. Now, they get served and you don't get any answer, or if they don't object to it, guess what? That's in place. And it's normally a year civil restraining order, which means they can't have contact with you. And if they do, you can go into court or you can go call the police and you can get them held in contempt and many times arrested because they had contact. Now, that is how easy it is to get a personal protection order. And what happened was Chris Armstrong filed this against this assistant attorney general and then withdrew it because he felt that Sherville, this assistant attorney general, would stop harassing him. But at the same time, he filed a complaint with the grievance commission trying to make at least allegations and a request for investigation that his law license be challenged and that he be sanctioned in many different administrative ways. You call me if you think that's right at 248-848-1310. Because many times, let me tell you, it is so easy to get a PPO, but once you go to try and take someone's livelihood away, you get try to get their law license taken away, some people would say you went too far. You call me, you tell me what you think. What do you think, Mr. K? My producer's got a definite opinion about that. Because I don't believe that is a absolute. You know, you get a lawyer. You get your own lawyer to make mistakes, to do something on your case. You might have a grievance. Do you know what I mean? You might have a reason to go to the Michigan grievance and the Attorney Grievance Commission and say, I want you to look at this. You might do that. But this wasn't his lawyer. This wasn't his individual lawyer where he did something unethical while he's representing him. Now, you might be able to sue him, okay? You might be able to file to get him to stop harassing you in circuit court, okay? But to go after his law license, I don't know. You got to tell me where, if that crosses the line or not. You call it 248-848-1310. And you let me know whether or not you think that is a proper type of remedy to go after this assistant attorney general's law license because you basically feel that his action as a lawyer, not your lawyer, but as a lawyer, crossed the boundary of ethics. Whether or not you think basically it crossed the boundary of what lawyers should be doing in this state or in this country. Because many times lawyers will do things in their private life that has nothing to do with them as attorneys. I mean, really.
Nothing.
I mean, do we get that in any different ways, right? We get that when we're doctors. I mean, you get a doctor who is, let's say, having an extramarital affair and his wife. And he's fooling around. Or he's harassing another woman. Or he's doing something outside of his province as a medical professional. Now, should you go after his medical license because of that? Or should the woman be able to file a PPO on him? Should the woman be able to sue him? Why should that make a difference on his professional license? Why should you be able to do that? I don't know. I don't think that is the appropriate remedy. You call me at 248-848-1310. You tell me whether or not you think you should always be able to go after someone's professional license, even though they did nothing in that professional capacity to harass you. I mean, you could make the excuse, I guess, that because this guy is an assistant attorney general, everything he does in his personal life, in his public life, should reflect upon his ability to practice law because he's a lawyer. I think that's a stretch. I really do. Unless he's somehow acting as an assistant attorney general, as a public official, and harassing this individual, brings charges against him, let's say, because he wants him prosecuted, this kid, or has some type of influence on his education as a student U of M, or gets him kicked out of U of M, or something because he is as his position as a lawyer for our state or as an assistant attorney general, then I could see, or maybe they could go against his license. Then there might be some type of legitimacy in doing that. But he was acting as an individual. Oh, I know what you're saying. We talked about it before. You swear the right. You go get that badge and you become a public official. Everything you do now, you should be held accountable for. But to go against your law license, to go against your ability to work outside that office, to take away your ability to earn income for your family forever because of something you did in your private life, you got to tell me if that goes too far. Because my personal belief is that goes too far. To go and file a grievance with the Grievance Commission on something that he did in his personal life that had absolutely nothing to do with him being a lawyer, with him representing clients, when he leaves the public office and he goes into private practice, it will affect the rest of his life. You think he should lose that license? You call me at 248-848-1310 and you tell me where I'm wrong. Okay, how old do you have to be to get sued? 30? 21? You have to be 16 years old? Uh-uh, that's not what the courts are saying now. Judge rules 4-year-old can be sued by an elderly woman. Did you hear what I said? Are you listening? Is this thing working? 4 years old. Can you imagine your 4-year-old getting sued? Well, that's not exactly what happened. You basically are being held responsible for your 4-year-olds. A 4-year-old girl accused of mowing down an 87-year-old woman with her bike on a Manhattan sidewalk is being sued for negligence. Last year, what happened was the woman was struck by a 4-year-old. A 4-year-old was apparently racing her bike on the sidewalk. According to the complaint, the children's mother were with them. And that's the issue. This isn't about suing just a 4-year-old. It's about, can you keep responsibility with the parent? Does the actions of the child reflect on the parent, and therefore the parent's inaction become a negligent act? And can you sue on that behalf? The decision was made by the Justice Paul Wooten, who's causing a major divide in the neighborhood. Can you imagine? The attorney said that they're arguing that, of course, the parent should have been responsible to keep the kid from running around. Is she old enough to be sued? No. But the parent should have been responsible, they say. A parent's presence alone does not give a reasonable child carte blanche to engage in risky behavior by running across the street. And that's what they're saying. They're saying that the parent should be held responsible for the actions of the kid, no matter how old that kid is. Todd, welcome to the show. What do you got to say about that? Should we hold the parents responsible for the actions of the kids? Todd, can you hear me? Hello, Todd. Well, we don't have Todd. Todd, call back. Because I'm telling you, everything our kids do, if we are held responsible for them, good grief. I got teenagers. Who knows what everything your teenager's doing? I mean, you could be the most responsible parent in the world, but you're not sitting with your kid all the time. You're not sitting in that car with him when he's driving down the road. Are we supposed to never trust our 16-year-old? Are we supposed to say that our 13-year-old can't walk to the store because he might do something and I'll be responsible? There's got to be some kind of rules with it. We can't just be held responsible if we're not encouraging them or sitting there and making sure they're not doing something. I mean, how do we hold the parents responsible? You call me at 248-848-1310. You tell me whether or not you think parents should be responsible for their actions of the kids. You back, Todd? Can you hear me?
Todd, you looking? Tom.
Hey, Tom, no, how you doing? Welcome to the show.
Calling on the attorney general who's involved with the U of M study.
What do you think? Do you think they should go against his law license?
Well, just the fact that he's an attorney general, the bar should be set a little bit higher for him, and that indeed his law license probably should be in question if the guy's doing something at that level.
But even if he didn't do anything in his private capacity, I mean, as a he did something as a private individual. He did not act on behalf of the Attorney General's office. He did not represent this guy in some type of private action as an attorney. He was he's an individual. Why should he lose his license?
But he has the power of the Attorney General, whether he's working as an individual or not, and I'm certain that he would be pulling that into his daily efforts, being that he's an Attorney General.
So is your opinion, if you are, let's say, a public official, because there's no question an assistant attorney general is a public official. Let me tell you something. You get a I used to be a prosecutor, assistant prosecutor. You get a badge. You get authority. You get the power of the executive branch to charge people criminally and civilly. Let me tell you something. That is a lot of power. And is your opinion that means everything you do, you should be held responsible for, whether it's in your public or private life?
And I think he's crossed the line with that power in this case.
Yeah, well, thanks for calling. You know what? I think you got a lot of people on your side that would believe the same thing. You read the blogs about this guy's blog, and man, they agree with that overwhelmingly, that this guy should be held responsible for his private acts in his public capacity, and that he should have those kind of, I guess, ramifications on his law license. You call me at 248-848-1310. You let me know what you think. Brooks, welcome to the show. What do you got to say about that?
Yeah, I was calling in regards to the four-year-old. It does seem preposterous that the parents there would be held responsible, but it's my understanding that if you're a parent and your minor child has a party in your house, and minors are consuming alcohol, and say you're in Cancun with your wife, I'm pretty sure the law holds you responsible if anything takes place there.
Well, that's a really interesting question. I have several different clients charged with that exact same thing. It's called having a house party. And it sounds crazy. It sounds like, oh, come on, give me a break. So the kids are drinking a little. I kick them out. Or you know what? We kept it in the house. There's no problems. I'd made sure the kids didn't drive home. Let me tell you something, parents. It's against the law. And they are prosecuting those things all over town now. Many different communities are doing that.
Now, I understand that woman that got ran over ended up dying from causes unrelated to the accident, but she did go to the ground, and I believe she suffered a hip fracture.
That's exactly right.
She was like 85 years old, and it was obviously an exercise of poor judgment on the parents' parts to let four-year-olds on a city sidewalk race bicycles.
But think about
it.
Come on.
An inappropriate place.
You've got your kid. Okay, so maybe there are better choices that the parents could make in many different things. I mean, let's face it, a four-year-old is just learning how to ride a bike, right? I mean, you might have a four-year-old who's got training wheels. I mean, I did it with my kids. You're riding down the suburban street. Let's say it's a suburban street. You're riding in the road, and you got your four-year-old riding there. He's riding on the wrong side of the road because he's a four-year-old. The parent's trying to take care of it. He runs into some lady who's walking down the street. It's the same type of situation. Your parent, just because they're present, is now held responsible for the actions of the kids, even if the parent is trying to be responsible. It's the end result that they're pointing to, saying, yes, but the kid in the end did run over the woman. The woman did get injured. Should we hold our kids responsible for the actions? Should we hold the parents responsible?
Well, in that particular instance, I would almost have to say yes. And the only reason why I would say that is due to the circumstances surrounding it. If the parents, even if the parents weren't there, I mean, the neglect involved of a parent to leave a four-year-old on a sidewalk on a bicycle. I mean, we're talking about a young child with little experience being on a little piece of transportation there that can cause trouble for them.
What do you think?
They could end up in traffic and getting run over. There are so many factors involved there. I think in this particular situation, obviously not the four-year-old, but the parent. The parent was supervising this. The parent was there. So if there's some liability involved in this, I certainly think they're entitled to be heard.
Well, let's say it's a little different. Let's say that the parent let the four-year-old without being there. Let's say the parent is not there and the four-year-old does it. Are they more responsible? Are they more negligent because they're not even there?
I would say yes, because a four-year-old requires adult supervision. And if there's no even a young adult, a brother, sister, babysitter, someone that's at least attained the age of teen years, I don't think a four-year-old should be left on a city sidewalk on a bicycle without some adult supervision. There's more appropriate places for that. That's why our tax dollars pay for parks and bike trails and everything else. That's the purpose of those things.
Well, that's interesting. So you think that the responsibility, the negligent action is either way, whether the parent is there supervising or whether the parent isn't there supervising. And you know what? You're right. That is exactly the way the law reads, is that if you are going to be responsible, you are going to be negligent. You can be held negligent whether you're there or not.
Absolutely.
And that is the dilemma, the catch-22 in many areas of what's called tort law, is that responsible guardians are found negligent many cases, whether they're supervising or whether they're not supervising, depending on the decision-making process. And that's why there's so many different lawsuits regarding our actions of the kids and basing that on the negligent action of the parents. That's very widespread.
It would be like having a pool in your backyard and the neighbor's kid is over, and even if you go inside just to use the bathroom or get some lemonade, if that kid ends up at the bottom of the pool, that's you.
Thanks for calling, Brooke. Yeah, you are exactly right. That is a huge dilemma when we have what are called open and odd invitations. Trampolines, hot tubs, pools, something in your backyard where it is considered what's called an open and obvious type of activity or opportunity. You got to supervise that. You got to make sure that those kids are well taken care of and there's some type of rules or you're going to be held responsible. Yeah, you can have house insurance and that's what your insurance policy is for, to cover your negligent actions. But let me tell you something. You'd have someone die in your pool. Many times you won't have enough insurance to cover that. You want to join this conversation at the break, you call me at 248-848-1310. This is Scott Weinberg on Crime Time Live. You stay tuned.
Anyone been arrested or charged with a crime? Do you want to stay out of jail and keep your record clean? Hi, I'm attorney Scott Weinberg, host of Crime Time Live, heard Saturday mornings 11 to 12 noon on 1310 WDTW. Call my office anytime to protect your rights at 1-800-NO-JAIL-1 or go to our website at 1-800-NO-JAIL-1.com. We have payment plans for everyone's budget. There should never be a price on protecting your rights. Call 1-800-NO-JAIL-1 right now.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said, you're the picture of health? You look healthy, you feel fine, but that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps, so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Welcome back to the show. We got a couple crazy questions going on here, but none least of which is, hey, Can you be buried without your brain? Did you ever hear about this? The courts rule. The Oakland County family had no right to a woman's brain. That's right. The Supreme Court says an Oakland County family had no legal right to a dead woman's brain when her body was returned after an autopsy. Karen Washel of Waterford filed the lawsuit after becoming alarmed that her mother's body was cremated without the brain. It was not released with the other remains because it had to be hardened before examined by the medical examiner. But yesterday, the Supreme Court said that the state law back in 2006 allowed a medical examiner to keep body parts as long as possible, or at least as long as necessary. The law was changed this year to require certain kind of notifications, but Justice Young and Alton Davis dissented because they didn't believe it was necessary to get involved. What about that? Should we have the right to our loved ones' body parts once they die and not have it used without our permission and have it returned to us so we can have them buried the way they wanted to be buried or they wanted their end? Should we allow the doctors to make that choice for us? You call me at 248-848-1310 and you let me know.
Well, you know,
think
here's
that.
Here's the
Mr.
thing with
K,
that.
What do you got to
see,
say?
See, you know, and I'm sorry, I've been dealing with technical issues, but I have a thought on this, and the thought is, I think you have the right to, you know, bury the remains of your loved one, unless the law enforcement body in your county or wherever you live seems to think that that is evidence of something. But once a death is ruled not to be of foul play. No, I think, I hate to say it like this, but I think almost the body becomes an asset, which is part of the estate, if it were me.
Well, there's many people that would agree. Unfortunately, what happens is when there's an autopsy done, and now they have the body part to be able to test to see what the cause of death was, the problem is, and the courts are saying, no, it is not a, quote, search and seizure now. No, now you lost your constitutional right to say, I want that body part because they are testing it because you gave them permission to test. See, here's the story. You can have, let's say, for instance, in the Jewish religion, you're not supposed to have an autopsy. I don't really know why. I'm sure there are reasons why. They wanted the body parts all together. But under the Jewish religion, you're not supposed to have an autopsy. Now, in modern days, of course, they have autopsies. The question is, are they supposed to put all the body parts back when they find it all out?
Well, Scott, I mean, and correct me if I'm wrong about, because I'm Catholic, but isn't there also in certain sects of Judaism that, you know, if you don't bury the body in its entirety, which is why there are actually crews in Israel after some of the unfortunate events that happened there that will go and try to reassemble bodies for that reason. And is there a legal precedent for deference for religious things like that?
That's a great question. You can call it 248-848-1310 if you got that answer, because I don't know that answer. But I can tell you this, is that what happens is, what happens when you do like here, you have to bury the body within, let's say you're Jewish, within 48 hours. And you did have an autopsy because it's modern day, and they have now this body part, and now they destroyed the body part as medical waste. So now there isn't any type of body part that you can put back because it's destroyed. And what happens here is they're claiming that the lawsuit was against the hospital and the doctor, saying that it was an intentional infliction of emotional distress, that they actually now hurt the emotions of the family. Obviously, the person is dead. It's the family that sues on behalf of the person, or at least on behalf of themselves in this case, saying that there was an infliction of emotional distress because the hospital did the wrong thing. You want to join this conversation, you call 248-848-1310. And that's really one of the issues, is should we have the right to say, this is what I want with my body when I die, in a living will, in our will, should we have the right to make that health care choice without having a hospital or a doctor violate it for whatever reason, whether they're saying that there's some scientific study that we want to perform, whether we're trying as an autopsy because it was a murder, let's say. Let's say someone got murdered and the family wants the person buried with no autopsy. And now the medical examiner, under law, has a right to do an autopsy. Who should take precedence? The state's interest to protect society and to find a killer and to decide whether or not it's a, quote, homicide, or the family saying, we don't care enough. We want to be able to have no autopsy and our family member laid to rest. You call me at 248-848-1310. Whether or not you think that state's interest or that medical interest outweighs or should outweigh the personal respect that someone has in their living will or in their testament to say, I want my body parts buried with me, or whether or not the family can make that choice too. Because I say the opinions are all over the place. I'd say that it depends many times, just like Mr. K is saying, on the religious beliefs of the individual. Most of the time, that's what takes place. We want something because of our religious beliefs. I mean, listen, there are many people that have organ donor cards. You know, on the back of your license. You got an organ donor request that your body parts specific can be used to save individuals once you die. Well, listen, you made that request. You don't want to necessarily be buried with your body parts. You put that in your living will. You put that in your declaration, what you want to have done when you die. Right? I mean, that's fair. Well, let's say that you don't even have that. You haven't made that specific request about your body parts. Should the state have the right to come in and say, we're going to do what we want? Or should the family now be able to come in? You call me at 248-848-1310, because that is, it, I think, unresolved still. Even though they've got this case going, I still think it's unresolved. There are dissenting opinions in the Supreme Court that will specifically say, hey, we think the family should have the right. And listen, that's why we have the Supreme Court, to make that type of determination with this society currently in 2010, with our mores and ethics, what should be done. That's why we elect them. You don't like it? Vote someone else in. Hey, you got a chance on Tuesday. You don't like what's going on in the Supreme Court? You think it's too conservative? You think it's too liberal? You go vote someone else in. Because that's what changes what happens in this state. Not necessarily just your opinion, my friend. It's who do you vote in for the Supreme Court? Because that is exactly our voice. Our voice, not just on the radio, but in the ballot box. Caller, what do you got to say about that?
Just about that. I think it shouldn't even be an issue. It should be up to the family. It has nothing to do with the state.
What if it's a murder? Let's say that your family member got murdered, and they have to find out what is the cause of death, what is going on with this case. It's an investigation, but the family wants that body buried intact before they can do that. Who should rule?
If it's involving a crime, then the state should be involved. It's overriding.
So the state, if there's a, quote, state interest,
an
investigation.
I think it's more than a state interest. You know, it involves another person. It's not just entailing that one person who was killed.
Yeah, but let me tell you about specifically murder cases, right?
Mm-hmm.
The interest is the people of the state of Michigan against the defendant. It's not the family against the defendant. So technically, the complainant in any kind of case like that, a criminal case, mm-hmm. while they say it's really the victim, it's not. It's the state. And what they're doing is they, quote, have a state interest in protecting the other public, members of the state, against further crime and against this crime. So the state interest in criminal cases is that's the problem. It is, quote, the state against the defendant. So they'll say any type of criminal act, it's the state interest to try to protect it. I don't know. I mean, I could quite frankly go back and forth. I think I want
right,
my family
yeah. I mean,
to do
when
it.
When you boil it down to that, I really don't know. But I mean, if it's just an average death, he doesn't have it in his will. He doesn't have an organ donor card. I think it should be left out to the family.
Do you think organ donors are proper in the state? Do you think we should encourage organ donors?
To each his own, you know.
What do you think?
If it's going to save a life, I would personally do it.
And that is the issue, isn't it? You many times, and I would agree. I mean, I would be an organ donor if I knew that I was going to die, and when I died, my eyes, my kidney,
right.
something of mine is going to save some kid, let's say, who just got an auto accident. Man, take it out.
Exactly.
Go give
exactly
it to him.
Same. Yeah, but I mean, if you're just going to take it out, it's going to sit in a jar or something. You know, it's
yeah. Or let's say they're going to use it for for cadavers, right?
Right.
Are they going
right.
to do experiments on it? I don't know if I like that.
Yeah, I know. I don't like it either.
That bugs me. I don't know if I want that going on. Thanks for calling. I think if you have a specific bequest and you know it's going to go and help someone, I am way more likely to do it. That's just me. I don't know. Maybe it's selfish. Maybe it's just because I want to know what happens to my organs. Maybe that's just crazy, but I want to know. I think organ donorship is a good thing. But for me personally, I get scared if I don't know what's going to happen with it. You call me at 248-848-1310. If you think somehow we should have the family make that choice, or the individual before he dies make that choice, and that can override a state's interest in deciding what happens with that body part, because that, quite frankly, is still, I think, up for grabs in the state. Hey, do you know about our new super drunk driving laws? Oh, man, you got to get to know about them because they are going over the top. Listen, nobody wants to have a drunk driver. Period. Nobody wants drunk drivers to be on the road. Prosecutors, cops, defense attorneys, judges, nobody wants anybody to be at risk of getting killed because there's a drunk driver. Period. However, just because someone drinks doesn't mean that they are drunk. Just because someone has a couple cocktails doesn't mean that they are too drunk or intoxicated to drive. And the super question is, how do we know that someone is over the limit so that they can drive? Hey, listen, until we're going to have breathalyzer machines in every bar, until every car is going to have a, quote, interlock device that you have to be able to blow into before you can drive, every single car has it, you're not going to know. It's a subjective question that because alcohol is legal in the state of Michigan, if you're 21, you're going to be able to have the opportunity to make the choice, have I had too much? And until you have some objective standard on how you make that choice, like a breathalyzer test, a pee test, a blood test, some machine, every time you leave that establishment, you are risking getting a drunk driving. You are risking going out and maiming and killing someone. So I don't have the answer, but I got the question. The question is, how do we keep our society safe when alcohol is legal and there's no restriction how much you can drink? Pretty much. Isn't that true? You don't have bartenders saying so much, hey, you know, buddy, I think you had too much. You could have four beers, the bartender still give you another beer, and then you go out, you might be over the legal limit. You have four beers, you're darn well tooting, you're over the legal limit.
Well, Scott, let me ask you this. Is there, let's say that I'm, Bill's Bar and Grill, or, you know, Kay's Bar and Grill here, and I overserve Scott Weinberg for the purposes of this discussion, and you go out and you were arrested for a DUI or you get in an accident on a DUI charge, am I liable under Michigan law as the bar owner, as the proprietor?
You better believe it in terms of there's an accident. If you're just driving drunk and you get caught and you get a criminal charge, you're not going to be found responsible for anything unless there's an injury.
There's your first solution. DUIs, go back, get the provider, and hammer him with a ticket. You will have instant sales of those portable breathalyzers with those strips that you can buy, and you'll have people being bartenders guarding against being overserved like you wouldn't believe. Solution two for me is this. We have state-funded programs for just about everything under the sun. There has got to be some kind of a way that we can fund something for late-night transportation in this kind of an occurrence.
Right. I mean, Mr. K is brilliant. That's exactly what they could do. They could make every single establishment that serves alcohol, every single individual that gives someone else alcohol, responsible criminally and civilly for their actions. And guess what you'll have? You'll have mayhem. Who's going to be able to? You got to give them up, one. And two, then you got to find out that they intentionally did that. Civilly, what it's called, is called dram shop. It's basically finding that the establishment served what's called a knowingly intoxicated person, and that they served them while they were intoxicated. And how are they supposed to know if they're intoxicated? It's not that they necessarily let them leave. That's not the criteria. That could be the criteria, but the criteria is, did they serve them while they knew that they were intoxicated? Not, did they get them intoxicated? And that's a very interesting area. But in terms of what happens in this state, there are several different things that people can do now. If they are in a bar or in a restaurant, anywhere that they are intoxicated and they drove there, there are designated driver companies now that you can sign up and you can be a member of, and they'll go pick you up in your own car. I mean, you can go to Birmingham. They got this great service called Green Cab. Man, they'll pick you up anywhere. It's not expensive. It's great. Guess what the problem is? You got to make the choice while you're intoxicated. It's insane. You got to establish that designated driver and become a member because you know you're going to go to a bar and do it. But you can't be responsible enough, or you can, but there are many people who aren't responsible enough when they get intoxicated to say, I'm too drunk to drive. And that's the problem. That's where you need friends. You need establishments. You need to have policies that they won't let you leave. And until they do that, like you're talking about, Mr. K, you're right. You're going to have drunk drivers just like you do now. But they have something new now. They got something called the Super Drunk Driving Law that takes effect on Monday. And it means this. If you have a blood alcohol content and it's 0.17, which is pretty high, that's two times the legal limit, right? The legal limit is 0.08. So you're two times over the legal limit at 0.17 or more, then they have now significantly enhanced the penalties for first-time drunk drivers. You're going to lose your license for longer. You're going to have a hard suspension with no restricted license. And you're going to have longer potential time in jail. So look out, public. There is even more reason now to do exactly what Mr. K is saying, which is be more responsible. Have the establishment be more responsible. Have some kind of onus on that establishment to make that person drink less or not leave without some type of way to get home as opposed to the way they got there. Listen, these establishments aren't going to cut their own throat and serve less because they want to be more responsible and are going to be held responsible unless it's going to hit them in the pocketbook. Until they're going to be taxed or fined more, they're not going to lose their alcohol sales. That's how they make money. They make money legally by selling more alcohol to more patrons. And until you hit them with a tax or a penalty or a fine or hold that principal responsible, they're going to keep serving it.
Scott, do you ever watch PBS?
Of course I do.
Okay, well,
love PBS.
You know, the funny thing, one of my favorite shows on PBS is Rick Steves Europe on the Create channel.
Yeah.
And every time he goes over into Europe and he talks about a bar, he puts a line in, and I think it says something about the difference between Europeans and Americans in this regard, okay? In Europe, they are free-flowing with the alcohol. They will serve you until you cannot stand up, if that's the way it, you know, needs to be. But he reminds his viewers all the time that you need to be careful. You need to arrange for transportation home from a bar because the penalties for drunk driving in Europe make ours look like a slap on the wrist.
Yeah, they not are, just Europe, but many places in the world.
They are darn near draconian.
Yeah. Well, they're very, very restrictive. But you know what? They also are way more lenient in letting the youth drink. You know, you go to France, I mean, you could be 12 years old and you're drinking at your home with your family, having a bottle of wine.
And isn't that interesting? Because the incidences of alcohol-related crime and drunk driving are substantially lower, you know, because they've ingrained into their cultures to be conscientious about liquor as opposed to just going out and getting absolutely ripped.
Yeah, but they might also be more lenient in their, not enforcement, but in their arrest of it. They might pour it out and let you go home. I mean, like they used to do in this country. You want to join this conversation, you call 248-848-1310. And you tell me, are our drunk driving laws, are they harsh in this state? Do you think they should be harsher? What do you think, caller? Because I don't know. I do it every day. And I think, you know, you go and you have a client who's charged with drunk driving. And let me tell you something, it affects their entire life. Even if first drunk driving. You get judges here in this state that do all different sorts of things. There's no uniformity. There isn't. There is no uniformity in what happens with our drunk driving laws. You have one judge in one city that'll do one thing. You get another judge here in Bloomfield that'll put you in jail on your first offense. Hey, many people think that's what you need to do. Right? Put them in jail. Be more draconian. Be more enforcement oriented, less education. Punish them, and you will have less drunk drivings. There'll be other judges that'll say, hey, listen, let's just educate them. Punishment is not the answer. Don't go stick them in jail. Give them alcohol education classes. Make them go sit with Mothers Against Drunk Driving, get screamed at, and show movies of people dying. That will make a difference. I don't know. I don't know what's better. Maybe there's a combination of it that should be better. You call me at 248-848-1310 and you let me know. Are our drunk driving laws in the state of Michigan, are they too draconian or are they not enforced enough? Should we put people more in jail or should we concentrate on more education?
You know what, though? It's a football Saturday, and since you've done this segue all day, you know, we talk about the enforcement of drunk driving laws, but let's take a look at how we really view this. I mean, Chris L. Rucker from Michigan State, and I'm a Michigan State Spartan at heart, but Chris L. Rucker from Michigan State gets a driving while intoxicated on probation, during which the conditions of his probation said you shall not drink or possess or purchase alcohol, gets a DUI. It gets pled down to some kind of violation. He gets an 8-day jail sentence, and he's eligible, if he wants to play against the Iowa Hawkeyes tonight. So how can we honestly say, as a state and as some other things, that we take a tough stand on this particular offense when there's that issue out there of a young man who can go from literally the Ingham County Jail on Thursday to a NCAA football field on Saturday evening?
Okay, but here's the story. He still went to jail. The question is this.
He paid his debt.
Listen, did he go to jail long enough? That's your question. Because the other is Sparty, should they not let him play? That's a totally non-judicial question. What do you think? Should Sparty not let him play no matter how much time he did in jail? Why is Sparty letting him play? That's a university question. That's a policy that they should take place. Should our NCAA members, should the actual athletes that play, should they stop from being eligible to play if they're on probation, if they've committed a crime, if they've created some type of conduct or had a conduct in their personal life that had nothing to do with being a university student, let's say, but affects their ability to perform and to be able to go for touchdowns? I don't know. That is a question that we definitely can mull over, because I'm telling you right now, it happens every day on every campus all across this country. For our purposes, let's hope that if they let them play, that he can get those Hawkeyes. Because let me tell you something, I might be a Wolverine, but I still write my check to Sparty every single year because I got a kid there. So let's go Sparty today. I want to make sure that your rights are protected. You call me at 248-855-1400 anytime during the week, and we'll talk more about it. We'll talk about these super drunk driving laws. I'll answer any of your questions, because that is what you need. You need your answers so you can be protected. Your civil rights, your state rights, your personal rights. You listen every week on Crime Time Live, and we will answer those. Be safe, baby. Go blue, go Sparty this week. See you next week.